Ivanka Višnjić, assistant professor at Sade Business School and research lead for business model innovation at Cambridge Service Alliance.
Ivanka, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Cambridge Service Alliance podcast series here today. We're looking at your new paper, When Innovation Follows Promise and Why Service Innovation is Different and Why That Matters. You say service companies account for 75% of economic activity in developed economies. Why did you decide to look at these companies now and how they innovate?
So Bonnie, what I thought was interesting with this subject is that if you look at innovation and if you think about what the most important innovations of the 20th century, for example, are, they're likely to be products, radio, TV, internet, computers. At the same time, you ask yourself, well, if 70% of the economy is based on services, why aren't we paying more attention to the innovation in services? Why are service companies not taking the lead in this game? And this is basically what was the main motivator for us. We wanted to understand how service companies can innovate. We've seen a couple of good examples. We've seen the likes of Ryanair or Disney in the business to consumer sectors, but we were also interested in services in the business to business sector. So we have spoken to four innovators and learned actually that the process of innovation in services tends to be different and often misunderstood and therefore also less used than in the product sectors.
Now, what were the four innovators that you looked at?
So we looked at two train manufacturers and solution providers, Hitachi Rail Europe and Bombardier Transportation. And we also looked at two industrial and aerospace equipment providers, Caterpillar Logistics and Rolls-Royce.
But do we know if there are particular factors that influence success in service innovation and how they differ from product innovation? So service innovation and product innovation are different.
Yes. So what is the most important thing, and it will sound trivial, but actually the awareness of how the process of service innovation happens and where it sits in the value chain in the service companies is what matters the most. So if you look at the typical product company, what tends to happen with innovation is that there is a specific R&D department where products get invented and then developed. Once they are ready, they get produced, they hit the market, customers buy them, companies forget about them. That is not what happens with services. In the service world, particularly if we are talking about relational services, service contracts that last for about 5, 10, or even 27 years in some cases, what we are seeing is that service agreement first gets signed and only then innovation starts. And it's not in an isolated R&D environment, but together with the client on the front line. That is what is very important to understand. You cannot isolate your service innovation.
And do you think because, as you said, 75% of economic activity now comes from service companies, do you think this is a field that people want to understand more about, that your paper is timely?
I definitely think so. I think there is, on one side, a lot of activity, particularly in the developed countries, coming from services. And a lot of countries in the Western world, OECD economies, are counting on their service sectors and service activities in manufacturing to compete against cost-effective Eastern countries. So that is one reason why that is important, the necessity. The second reason why that is very important is actually the possibilities and potential that technology is offering. Today we are seeing a lot of technologies in form of instruments such as RFID tags or sensors or even cameras of our mobile phones that help us to capture the data and to manage the flows and processes and services. So it's certainly a timely question. There is a need as well as the opportunity.
And you talk about concepts like risk and reward in service innovation, and they're different from product innovation. One would automatically assume, say, if you were a rail provider or company or making railway tracks for governments all over the world, that you might think, well, the product would be the long-term investment, but the service takes a long time to build up.
Yes, absolutely, Bonnie. So what is very interesting here is that, let's go back to the process. So we said in manufacturing and production, you first have an isolated R&D unit that produces new products. They're very much aware that they have to spend 10, even 20% of their sales to invest in these R&D units that help them develop new products. These products are then sold, actually put on the market, and then the market decides whether they are good or bad, whether they are useful or not. So I'm stylizing this a little bit, but what actually happens is that you invest a lot of money up front and then you get the market risk. You get the market test once you sell the products. In services, what happens is actually the other way around. You do not have market risk. Your service innovation starts from signing the contract with your customer that sometimes actually lasts for 27 years. So your market risk is effectively zero for that service. But what you get is a different kind of risk. It's a risk that once you get immersed into delivery of that service, once you start to provide what you promise to provide in the contract, that you will at that point face some of the unexpected problems. So for example, we have spoken to our rail manufacturers and solution providers, and they started to discover that actually the predictive maintenance on the trains that they have vouched to deliver is much more complex, simply because there were no experiences, there were no past experiences, and this was a first of a kind contract. What happened then is that in the first months of the service delivery, the company was facing penalties. But what happened, and here we come to the reward part, is that they took those under quotation marks failures, initial failures to learn from, and they turned that into the most profitable and most effective contract that actually then has been voted as one of the most valuable service contracts in UK.
So if we then, you've given a little tip there about rail service providers, but then if we take your four case studies, I know that you know you went in depth and dug down with them, but is it possible to give us a key finding from each? Let's start with the Hitachi Rail Europe.
I think that the most important learning from Hitachi Rail Europe, one thing that I was very astonished by when studying their case, is that they were able to sufficiently invest in understanding the situation, recruiting the right people at the time of the design of the contract. So that made them more aware of the potential risks that might emerge during the delivery of the contract. They were also at the same time very brave, take those risks, but in a controlled manner. So I think the most important and interesting part is the actual signing of the contract stage with them, and then the delivery that was relatively easy because they did acquire all the right capabilities and they knew what they needed.
And now that's surprising, the signing of the contract being yes, the most important. Okay, the second one, Bombardier Transportation. What did you find there?
Yeah. Just a small note to wrap up Hitachi. Actually, you mentioned relatively small things as signing of the contract. One of the latest contracts that they signed actually took for about 2 years to sign. So we are talking about extremely complex contracts, and this is how important it is to get them right. And that is why they were excellent at it and excelled.
Thank you for telling us that. Yeah. And a key finding from Bombardier Transportation.
Bombardier Transportation is a very interesting case on how a company can take an audacious step in terms of service innovation and get committed to provide a service that is very novel and first of a kind, and then bravely reorganize itself to deliver that service. Bombardier did face initial challenges in delivery of their service. However, they took those challenges, changed and innovated the process of the delivery of the proactive maintenance, and became one of the best service contracts in UK.
Rolls-Royce, a name that we've all heard of. Can't imagine that you could teach Rolls-Royce anything, that they would have learned everything there is to know already.
Yes, Rolls-Royce was, I was very, very excited when I got to study Rolls-Royce. One of the key findings, and I think there are many, but one that kind of stuck with me is that they were very good in understanding their customers and working together with their customers, both at the stage of contract signing as well as in the stage of delivery of that service contract. So they were able to learn from their customers and also convince them to adjust some of their processes in order for the joint service to be co-created in a better way.
So that's quite unbelievable that Rolls-Royce, with their global reputation, weren't arrogant. They were still wanting to learn.
Indeed, Bonnie. It was one of the things that I thought was very interesting. They were very empathetic towards their customers, and we noted they were really focusing hard on understanding.
If we now move on to Caterpillar Logistics, just tell us a little bit about what they do and why their findings were important too.
So the findings from Caterpillar Logistics were important because they had a relatively different setting. So it was an industrial manufacturer that decided to provide logistics services on the basis of their internal capabilities to do complex logistics. Caterpillar was interesting because they showed us that actually service innovation is not an all or nothing game. Over the 20 years that they have been innovating in the service space, they managed to gradually improve and extend their service portfolio by innovating. So they wouldn't necessarily jump from nothing to a 20-year contract. Their first contracts were modest. They were learning on an ongoing basis from them. And then they got to the point where they provide complex service contracts with guaranteed logistic effectiveness and actually collaborate with several partners to deliver IT solutions necessary to provide those contracts.
And so really what you've learned from these four case studies is that the conventional business thinking in terms of innovation and product innovation doesn't necessarily translate to service innovation, and that you need to develop new business models. One of the concepts you talk about, firms need to prepare properly and they need simultaneity and co-creation.
So basically, we strongly believe that business model innovation and changing from a product-oriented to a service-oriented business model is the first step to understand what service context really means and to start with what co-producing with the client really means. And then the next step from that point onwards is to co-create with your clients, to innovate together with them, not just deliver regular services, but to innovate jointly with your clients.
And if we look at those six steps for service innovation in your conclusions to succeed, you talk about preparing for service innovation, mastering the learning challenge, customer collaboration, risk and investment assessment, set up to leverage the knowledge gained, cross-functional decision making. Now, a tough moment for you. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is any one of those more important than the other? What do you find the most surprising of those findings?
That is a tough question. Well, I think the most important one that I would single out is that companies really have to be aware of the process and they really have to manage their expectations on where they are facing risks, where they are expecting to get the reward and play the long game together with their clients.
If we have a look at one of the things you say in your report, you say our research confirms the importance of the relationship between service provider and client in service innovation and the provision of relation-based services. So it's easy to say, but is it easy to achieve in reality? That, you know, we've got to think of all these things at once, not just the product, the service. It requires a lot of a management team, doesn't it?
Indeed. So one of the problems or challenges with services and managing in service environment is that there are no clear boundaries. That's why there is a need for cross-sectional teams. That's why there is a very high need to collaborate with clients, is because the service innovation process is spread out across organizational boundaries as well as within the company. What is most difficult, I think, to do there is to really set those lateral coordinations and to really use relationships instead of necessarily direct hierarchies.
So you'd use the relationships, the contacts, the networks that you've got.
Absolutely. That's the key.
We'll go back to that 75% figure of economic activity in the developed economies coming from service companies. Is it important that we have papers like yours so that during a recession, knowledge spreads? People don't think, oh gosh, I can't do anything that works. They can get up and go and say, well, look, if we read this paper, we're not going to be daunted by the challenges ahead of us. We're going to be able to cash in on service innovation.
Unsurprisingly, I think it's very important to have more papers and more research like we are doing in the Cambridge Service Alliance. There is also so much more to be done. This is a very unexplored area. We have learned a lot about how to make a better car, how to make a better pill, how to design a better service and how to deliver it, how to innovate business models of service companies. We are just scratching the surface, and we have 75% of economy that's waiting for those answers. So I think, Bonnie, I think it's a very timely question, and we should all in academia as well as consulting think about how to answer it.
So more research papers ahead of us, and exciting, as you say, innovative research in itself.
Indeed, and we are definitely hoping to lead the way as Cambridge Service Alliance on that.
Ivanka Vishnik, Assistant Professor, Asade Business School and Research Lead, Cambridge Service Alliance. Thanks for talking to the Cambridge Service Alliance podcast series today. I've learned so much.
Thank you very much, Bonnie.